passion and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
This might be college football heaven. Yeah.
Welcome back. Just talking here to John Clay as we welcome all of you back. Some people have asked me, were we going to have Coach Cal on? And we were hoping to. He's out of town, according to his staff. So John, that would have been. It's always great to see Cal on the eve of the basketball season.
He's been doing a lot of traveling here lately. I think he was in Philadelphia last night. If you follow him on Instagram or Twitter, you can keep up with Cal. Okay. He's been kind of globetrotting around here recently.
I mainly follow Taylor Swift. I haven't quite gotten down to Coach Cal yet. It's great to see you. We've had so many conversations with John. He's covered this team a couple of years.
What year
are we on now?
Let's see. I started on the football beat in 1987. Got promoted to columnist in 2000. So, you know, grew up here. So, been following Kentucky football pretty much all my life.
What I found remarkable, because one of your former colleagues, Jerry Tipton, covered the Cats for like 40 years.
Right.
You've covered them
long time.
This is unusual.
Yeah, that's true. Feel very lucky to still be doing it. Very lucky to do it. Yeah, Jerry retired a couple of years ago. I'm glad to report Jerry is transitioning to retirement really well.
Right.
He's doing great. I see Jerry about once a week, so he's doing great.
He got out at a good time, yeah, considering the Cats the last couple of years.
Right. Yeah, it's been on the basketball side. It's been disappointing the last two or three years, but they got a really good freshman class coming in this year. The big story right now, basketball wise, I know we got a big football game.
But I am interested in basketball.
Big story basketball wise is they have a Croatian kid, 7'2" kid, who has committed to come to Kentucky, but they haven't been able to get him in school yet. And the clock is ticking on that. They've got two other big men, both of whom are hurt. They expect to get him back. But it would really help to get the Big Z. I'm not going to try to pronounce his name, Paul. Everybody calls him the Big Z. So that's the big story
John,
right now.
John, what could possibly be the issue of a Croatian coming to the University of Kentucky?
Well, there are, you know, admission policies and hoops you have to jump through and that sort of thing. So that seems to be seems to be holding things
now,
up.
Now, this will not go over well here in the Commonwealth, but... If this had been 10 years ago, could Cal have gotten him in quicker?
Well, I don't know. You said that. I didn't say that. I don't know. We'll see. He got Enos Kanter into school, but the NCAA wouldn't let him play. So I don't know if this is another one of those deals or not. We'll just have to see.
Okay. Well, let's get to the subject of the moment, and that's college football. That's what these folks are here for.
Right.
Florida is in town. There was a time when it didn't matter how good Kentucky was, they would lose this game. That narrative has changed.
Right, yeah. I was there, Paul, for the Steve Spurrier beatdowns of Kentucky, the 73-7, 65-0 games like that, where Spurrier would make his usual Spurrier remarks about, well, Kentucky's got a good punter. You know, he'd say stuff like that. It's changed in the last 5 years when Kentucky won down in Gainesville in 2018 and broke that 31-game losing streak. Kentucky's won three of the last five. If they win on Saturday, it'll be their third win in a row over Florida. That hasn't happened since Bear Bryant was the Kentucky coach back.
Bear Bryant coached here. Where have I heard that before?
They won four in a row from 1948 to 1951. I'm old, Paul, but I'm not that old. I wasn't around for those games. But, yeah, Kentucky, I think they're a one-point favorite on Saturday. So, yeah, they really have. Stoops has done an incredible job, and one of the things you have to point to is the success he's had against Florida.
By the way, there's somebody out there probably emailing me right now or texting me saying, oh, how could you not know that? I mean, haven't you heard the story that the reason Brian left is that he got a lighter for winning the SEC and Adolph Rupp got a car?
Right.
I have heard that. And I don't believe that story.
Yeah, I think that story has grown over the years. Although, I know in Bear Bryant's book, he said that he regretted leaving Kentucky, that he did let his ego get in the way, and he did let, all the attention to basketball get in the way. But I think it worked out for him pretty well after he left.
Well, I have this from people in Bryant's immediate family, that he and Coach Rupp were good friends and remain good friends.
Absolutely.
For a long time.
Absolutely. In fact, when Coach Bryant was also the athletic director at Alabama, and he was looking for a basketball coach, and he called Coach Rupp and asked him for a recommendation, and Coach Rupp recommended Sam Newton, who went on to win multiple SEC titles at Alabama. So, yeah, I think that part of it was kind of blown up the relationship between the two of them.
And Sam really became one of the most influential people in SEC history.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's a better story that they didn't like each other. But
right.
I won't go too far with this, but I was – told that Coach Bryant loved it up here. I mean, a lot of high rollers.
He did.
I think he liked the nearby bourbon distilleries.
Right. No, he had a lot of good friends here. A lot of influential people who were on his side and loved him. And but like I said, I think it turned out for him. Okay.
It did turn. So he goes. I know this is going backwards in time, even before my time or yours. So he went from here to A&M. Is that right?
Correct. That's right.
Before they got in the SEC.
That's right. That's right. They had the Junction Boys at Texas A&M. That's correct.
He nearly wiped out a whole group of freshmen during spring practice or fall practice, and here we are. So let's talk about this for a second, because I saw Mark Stoops here about 2 hours ago, and I was reminded of a game 8 or 9 years ago when his job was literally on the line. One weekend we were here, he survived, and both Mitch Barnhart and Dr. Capiluto talked about it. You covered that. I mean, what were those dreary days like, and how close do you think did it come?
Well, I mean, you know, the first year they went 2-10. He inherited a bad situation. They had dropped. Rich Brooks had done a really good job, but had fallen off after Rich left. When they hired Mark, the cabinet was pretty bare when Mark came in. The next 2 years, they got off to good starts, but they collapsed at the end and didn't make bowl games. That was when people were wondering, is this guy really going to be able to get it done? He finally turned it around the next year where they got to a bowl. They've been to a bowl every year since then. You know, a friend of mine said this, I repeat this all the time, you really have to be a longtime Kentucky football fan to really appreciate the job Mark has done. He's built it from the ground up, good foundation. He's gotten a lot of facility improvements, the training center right here, the renovations to the stadium, that sort of thing. And he's done a great job of evaluating talent and identifying guys that would fit into his program that he could develop. Josh Allen is a great example. Was like a 2- or 3-star kid up east. He got him here, developed him. He was the 7th overall pick in the NFL draft. Jamin Davis is another kid who was a first-round pick a couple of years ago by Washington. It's guys like that have made the program. I always kind of look, if you look at the SEC, you know, all the SEC players that are drafted in the NFL, I think that gives you a good gauge of what kind of talent, what kind of development you're doing. And the number has gone up significantly of drafted players since Mark has been here.
No, it's true, John. And I think that, you know, however he did it, and however they, you know, Mitch and Dr. Capiluto stuck with him, it wasn't really an easy decision, I don't think, because usually after a couple of years, the best thing to do is just start over, even though Kentucky wrote the book on just gritting your teeth.
Right, yeah. In this day and time, you go, that used to be a 5-year plan. There's no more 5-year plans, as you well know. It's 2 or 3 years. If you haven't produced in 2 or 3 years, you're gone. But they did stick with Mark, and it's paid off for him.
Brian Harsin watching right now from Idaho saying, I know what you're talking about, 2 years.
Right.
So what I've always really found interesting, and you know, there's the narrative about Kentucky being a basketball program. Well, we know that, but I've always thought that when things were going fairly well, this is an amazing football program. That I know that it's nothing new to you. You've covered it forever, but I do think there's a disconnect a little bit with the people out in the hinterlands about how feverish these fans are about football.
There has been a core following of Kentucky football for years who've gone through a lot of heartache, a lot of losing seasons, but have stuck with them. Obviously, you know, in really good years, they expand on that core. Really bad years, maybe it drops a little bit. But there's always been a core following of people who pride themselves on being Kentucky football fans at a school where basketball gets the most attention. We've stuck with them through thick and thin, and it's paid off. I mean, if you go to the bowl games, huge crowds of Kentucky fans.
Right.
fans follow them to bowl games. They follow them on the road, even in losing seasons, even during tough times. And I think they've been rewarded the last few years. The big question now is, can they take that next step? Can they get up to where they'd love to play in Atlanta, playing a championship game? Can they do that? As you well know, Paul, that's a hard thing to do.
I remember 2 years ago, this 2 years in a row. Last year around this time, we were in Oxford, Titanic matchup, top 10 teams, bust. 2 years ago, same scenario. Remember being in Athens, bust. A win tomorrow, and we're right back to that situation. There's something about this Kentucky team. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with getting over the hump, but a win tomorrow and next week in Georgia is a really big game.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, two or three years, they wanted to get it to where it was Kentucky and Georgia. Now, Mark has never beaten Georgia since he's been here. It's the one SEC East team he hasn't been able to beat. But they would like to make that game mean something. It didn't really last year because they lost to Tennessee. But Ole Miss, the game down in Oxford. So that makes this a very important game. It's an important game for both teams tomorrow, Florida and Kentucky.
Oh, yeah. No,
there's no doubt about it.
We're about to talk to a former Gator who I think caught a winning touchdown pass to beat the Wildcats.
I was at that game, too. That was the 7-interception game.
Was that
Kentucky threw 7 interceptions and still lost the game.
Okay.
And thanks to Chris Doering.
I remember that game. I was driving somewhere from an Alabama game, and I was listening. I said, Kentucky's about to beat Florida. Here we go.
Right,
there it is.
Right. 7 interceptions. Yes, yes.
Thanks, John. It's always great to see you.
Great to see you, Paul. Thanks for having me on.
One of our favorite people, John Clay, joining us here in Lexington. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we are live in Kentucky. Thanks so much for being here. It's been a very memorable program. Let's head to the studio as we do every Friday with C.D. Chris. So before we get to the games, I was struggling. I remember listening to the game on the radio. Which year was it that you caught the winning touchdown and broke the Cats' heart?
30 years ago this season. It's hard to believe. 1993, September 11th. So a little later in the schedule this year where Florida and Kentucky are hooking up. But can't believe it's been 3 decades now, man.
So what were the circumstances? Because I mean, all I remember is listening, going, "How did Florida win this game.
Yeah, I heard John mention they threw seven interceptions. Jeff, Terry Dean threw four, Danny Werfel threw three, and somehow, I don't know how Coach Spurrier decided which quarterback to go with, but on that final drive, we were trailing 20-17. We got a good kickoff return from Harrison Houston. Eric Rett caught a couple balls, got down to about the 28-yard line, and Danny threw a ball to me over the middle of the field that I almost caught one-handed, but it would have been short of the end zone, and time would have probably ran out. So ran the same exact play again. Jack Jackson's to my right, Harrison Houston, Aubrey Hiller to my left, and so I was probably the least likely guy. I'd been on scholarship for about 3 weeks by that point in the season, and clearly the Kentucky defense probably thought the other three guys were more of a threat, but able to run the same route down the middle of the field, got off cleanly, and Danny hit me in stride. So going back and watching it always seems like the ball takes forever to hit my hands, and I often wonder what it would have been like. I certainly wouldn't be here with you had I not caught that pass, but the funny thing is Gator fans talk about that play so often, and in my life I actually caught 29 more touchdowns after that, but that's the one my sophomore year that everybody kind of remembers.
Well, it's the only one I remember. Chris Doering joining us to talk about some games tomorrow. Auburn heading to Georgia. We know how great this game used to be. What about tomorrow?
Yeah, can you believe we're leading off with this one? I mean, usually we crescendo to big games, and the Deep South's oldest rivalry typically is one of those big games. But with Auburn being kind of where they are right now, and let's be honest, it's a reconstruction project there for Hugh Freeze. And I think last week you saw his post-game interview, the exasperation that he had, not only with the way they played in that game, but I think forecasting the rest of the year, it's going to be a long season. They don't have the quarterback. They don't have the receivers that they need. So these guys, Hugh Freeze, Phillip Montgomery, the offensive coordinator, they're going to have to find a way to manufacture some yards, and they're going to have to create some explosive plays, which is tough to do against this Georgia defense. But I was shocked, I don't know about you, Paul, to see that they were only 14.5 point favorites. I would have thought they were probably four touchdown favorites. So it leads me to believe maybe the folks out in Vegas have some confidence in this Auburn defense. Maybe they question Carson Beck in this offense. But I feel like the schedule has allowed Carson Beck to get his feet wet, and he's playing with a lot of confidence right now. So I don't imagine it's close, but I guess the Vegas line would tell us otherwise.
Well, I listen to you more than the Vegas line. Let's get to Arlington. Arkansas, hard luck team of late, lost two games in the final possession, heading to A&M, a team that's trying to get on a roll before Bama next week.
Yeah, A&M's a team that I've been out on, I've been in on, and out on, and now I'm back kind of in on them again. And a lot of it has to do with the defensive side of the ball. I was very disappointed with the way they played against Miami. Since that time, it seems like DJ Durkin has those guys playing more relaxed, playing with more confidence. The front seven's been able to create some pressure as they did last week in sacking Auburn seven times. The secondary is covering better, not giving up the same big explosive plays. So I like the improvement on that side. And I think for the other side of the ball, Max Johnson, really no drop-off whatsoever. And that's no indictment of Connor Wegman. I thought he was playing really well prior to his injury. But this team's in good shape with Max Johnson and going up against an Arkansas defense that supposedly was better in the secondary. I'm not really buying it after what I saw last week with the way that LSU's receivers and Jaden Daniels was able to torch them. They're going to have problems with this group of receivers, who I think is almost as good as LSU's group. I see this game going big time in favor of the Aggies. I know weird stuff happens in Arlington in this ball game, but I think Texas A&M's the better team here, and I think the woes kind of continue in Fayetteville.
Continuing with Chris, let's head to Knoxville. Everyone remembers last year when South Carolina beat Tennessee. Injuries to Hendon Hooker, part of the reason. What about this year?
Yeah, I don't know what the returns have been like from your callers, but it's been kind of a mix of folks that I've talked to in Knoxville as it relates to this game. A lot of people talk about revenge, and then there's some other Vol fans that are a little nervous about the Gamecocks coming to town. That's a lot of respect for what Shane Beamer has been able to do, even more respect for what Spencer Rattler's done this year. I think he's the MVP through the first month of the season based upon what he's had to do to carry that team without much of a running game for much of the season, without much real protection up front. But as I decide who to go with on this game, it really has more to do with the Tennessee offense. And I have been really uninspired by what they've done on that side of the ball, whether it's been the lack of consistency throwing the ball, whether it's been the lack of receivers making plays. I thought this group of receivers was one of the best in the conference coming into the season, and they've largely underimpressed so far. Maybe getting Cooper Mays back can help the offensive line be a little more solid. They've been disappointing as well in pass protection. I think it comes down to whether South Carolina can stop the run and force Tennessee to throw the football, beating them. And that's kind of ironic to say, given how proficient they were throwing the ball last year. But I think it shows what a difference losing a guy like Hendon Hooker, Jalen Hyatt, Cedric Tillman means. Those other guys just haven't stepped up. So I'm taking the Gamecocks here. I know that they're double-digit underdogs. I think they win this game in Knoxville and continue to have questions about where the direction of this team and this offense is going and for the Vols this season.
Ooh, big one there. LSU heading to Ole Miss. Ole Miss struggling after last week.
Yeah, a lot of pressure in this game, I think, for both teams, really. I think there's a lot at risk and very little to gain. Like, you win, it's survive in advance. You lose, and it's basically a loser-leave town kind of situation. Whether you're talking about Ole Miss having two losses in the West and being out of the contention for the SEC championship game, or for the other side with LSU. They lose twice, they're out of the national championship race. Sure, they can get back to Atlanta. Sure, they can compete for an SEC title. But this is a game that could ruin a lot of the hopes that people had for the LSU Tigers, including myself, getting into the college football playoff potentially. So I think that when I look at the matchup itself, I look at the front seven for LSU. It feels a lot similar to what the Alabama offense or front seven looked like last week. The offensive line for Ole Miss has underperformed, and people think about the explosive passing game that Ole Miss has had under Lane Kiffin. It really revolves more around the ability to run. What you can do having success running the football, what that does to allow you to get the tempo going. I feel bad for Quinshon Judkins. He just hadn't had anywhere to go with the rushing offense this year. But for whatever reason, I don't know why. I think all these things I just told you set up like I'm going to go with LSU. I have a feeling that this is a game that Ole Miss wins. And LSU has had some clunkers on the road. Go back to Texas A&M last year, let one get away there. They certainly have had other instances. They're only three. They've lost three of the last five in Oxford. I'm going to go with the Rebels, even though, you know, conventional signs would tell me otherwise. I just think for some reason Ole Miss wins it.
Okay, let's get to the game here. We're trying to get some juice on what's going to happen between Florida and Kentucky. Where will this game be won or lost?
This is tough for me, Paul. I've come on this show with you for years now and talked about Mark Stoops and talked about this program. I picked Kentucky to be the second best team in the East heading into the season, but I've been disappointed with the offense. I think maybe it has to do with how high the bar was set in my mind for what Devin Leary could do along with Liam Cohen. But they just have not consistently put it together on offense. I'm waiting for them to show up and put a four-quarter performance together, but they just haven't done it. I think, you know, part of what my disappointment is because of how high my expectation level were for this Kentucky team. And on the flip side for Florida, I had them in the preseason, you know, winning five games. And so I've recalibrated a little bit. I'm more confident in the defense and what Austin Armstrong's doing there. I've been really impressed with Graham Mertz as a leader on the offensive side. I just think the inconsistency on offense for Kentucky is going to come back and bite them. I think this is a game where it's won on the lines of scrimmage. And as Roman was talking about with you guys earlier, the offensive line is better this year, but still some leaky interior protection. And I think that Florida is going to be able to exploit that. I think it's a hard-nosed, well-played, tough physical football game, but I think the line of scrimmage ends up being won by Florida and the Gators win a close one.
Okay. Chris Dorian, as always, a popular man here in the Commonwealth.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
They have a podcast called My Dad and Me, the SEC podcast. Courtney and Jeremy, or just Dad. Great to see both of you.
I know, nice great to see you. I haven't seen you since 2015 when y'all came here for SEC Nation and I shadowed Kaylee Hartung.
Oh my goodness, now she's moved to Thursday Night Football.
And
so let's talk about you for a second. You've been a very successful reporter, Courtney, and as we look at one more tweeter saying, all I'm saying is a Feinbaum call, my dad and me and the SEC would be on set faster than you can sing the theme song. Well, we will not make you do that, but I want to talk about your past.
Appreciate it.
You're pretty integrated into reporting on the SEC. How did it all begin?
Right there. We've had season tickets in Commonwealth for my whole lifetime, before my lifetime. And I was just born and raised on SEC football. Here, we've got roots in LSU, which resulted in me going there. We've got friends in Starkville, in Oxford, in Knoxville, and all over the place. And I just grew up knowing and loving the SEC as the end-all, be-all. And not just of football, but basketball, baseball, gymnastics, softball. So I was raised there on football, watched some tough football in the early aughts, but have gotten to watch Kentucky have a complete 180 since then. Went on to LSU, was very fortunate when I was in LSU, and then started my career in sports broadcast with the hope of making this not my last time up here.
What about it, Dad?
I mean, can't say more. So proud of Courtney. I didn't know that when I went to Western Kentucky years ago and got a broadcasting degree myself that this is where we would end up. But, you know, when she called me from LSU her junior year and said, hey, you want to start a podcast? I said, about what exactly? And
by the way, that's more than most people who start podcasts. Mm-hmm. Most people just do it.
They just do it.
Most people just call you.
And try. But let's do a podcast. Well, what do you want to talk about? Let's just talk about the SEC. And fortunate enough for her, it was the Joe Burrow year at LSU. Pretty decent year to start the podcast. And here we are 5 seasons later. Just had our 100th episode.
Really?
So very happy. And, you know, I can't think of a better way to spend an hour of my week than sitting down and talking to her.
Well, usually the new way on podcasts, they're you know, one says blue, the other one says green. Being father and daughter, is it a little more collegial?
I guess it depends on the topic.
It depends on the week. It depends on the week, and it depends what we're talking about. When we get into gymnastics season, I'm driving. It's all me. But when we get into football, and Dad is telling some of these stories about growing up, loving Kentucky, but also loving Spurrier and some of the greats, we really get into it and go back and forth on topics. I mean, our biggest beef these last couple of weeks has been Lane Kiffin and if he's the real deal.
I mean, Lane's the real deal. We're excited to see. This week we had an over-under.
By the way, I will join in here if you don't mind.
Go right ahead.
So what's been the beef on Kiffin?
It started with the whole Twitter of it all, because that's a big thing we talk about. We obviously talk about X's and O's, here's who's winning this week, but we talk about everything in the SEC, whether that's the actual athletics, whether that's the spirit squads. My sister's on a college dance team, so we talk about that a lot. Whether it's the mascots. So we talk about everything. And Lane's Twitter, and rest in peace Mike Leach's Twitter, was a big jumping off point when we got started. And so lately, I went to school in Louisiana. I love Tulane. It was saying, can Tulane really do this? I said yes. Dad said no. Dad was right.
Dad was right, as usual.
So leave it to me to ask, you know, what's been the biggest dispute that you guys have had?
Oh, wow. Biggest dispute.
Biggest dispute. That's a
Yeah, when
one.
You wanted to go work in Knoxville was a pretty big dispute.
What's wrong with that? I think it's a great place.
That's what I said. I said in black and white it would have been a great place to be. But, you know, we've gone back and forth on a couple of things. But at the end of the day, we're both diehard Kentucky fans, no matter what the sport is. We've grown to love LSU. And so I guess it would be that, you know, when I was going to say when Kentucky played LSU here a couple years ago, but we knew Kentucky was winning that game when they did.
Yeah, I would say the disputes are more with our friends in the SEC. We have a great friend, Todd Malden, down in Starkville. He loves to come on, talk state, especially when Kentucky and state now have a loose rivalry. I think the SEC is going to disrupt that a little bit in the future. But right now, we get to have those kind of back and forth, which makes it a lot of fun with our other friends around the conference.
So you obviously have a lot of contacts, so you can get the A-list guests. So who is next? I mean, who is that elusive guest? There's a lesson in law. Never ask a question you don't know the answer.
Exactly.
Walked into that one.
You walked right in. Teed it right up for
Well, I mean, we're both broadcast people. Obviously, you want to have the athletes and the coaches and
right.
people like that, but for us, it would be to have somebody like you or Laura Rutledge or Alyssa Lang, those people who like us.
I can get you both Laura Rutledge and Alyssa Lang, so I will work on that.
Those people who like us just know the SEC and know why it is so special
sure.
and that it is so special and can see it from a broadcaster perspective, but also a fan perspective. I mean, at the end of the day, Laura's not rooting against Florida. I'm not rooting against LSU or Kentucky.
Courtney, starting Sunday, we're in my neighborhood, and our mailbox will have pink bows across, and they'll have that across the country in honor of Cancer Awareness Month. You, unfortunately, saw that firsthand. Mm-hmm. Share your story with us.
Absolutely. So it is the next to last day of Thyroid Cancer Awareness Month right now. I was diagnosed in July of 2015. Dad was diagnosed in February of 18.
February of 18.
It is, they say it is treatable, but aggressive when I was diagnosed. So it was a quick journey to get the thyroid out, undergo radiation, and get all of that done before it could progress any further. And then fortunately enough, Dad has the wherewithal to feel a bump on his neck and to know this is something that should get checked out. And so ever since we've both been healthy, we've both just been advocates of checking your neck and seeing if there's anything going on in there, because your thyroid controls pretty much everything. And it has made my job difficult. You know, I'm running up and down the sidelines when I was working out in Hazard, and I would get tired, but knowing that I've pushed through greater things and I can push through that. And actually today I found out that my cancer antibodies have continued to drop and taken one of their biggest drops since I got sick. So, and Dad's healthy too, and we've just made it our mission to, SEC football is our thing, family is our thing, but we want to educate people about that as well.
You know, you had Dr. Capiluto on earlier talking about the research facility. My father-in-law, Courtney's grandfather, was one of those people who part of the research community over at UK as a professor. We're very fortunate, one of the top thyroid doctors in America practices over at UK. So our treatment was extremely thoughtful and effective, and we're just fortunate to be here and to be able to bring awareness to it as well.
Well, we have two more days of September, then we run into October. It's important for everyone to be aware. We thank both of you for sharing that. And as soon as Laura gets back from London, I will hook you up with her.
Sounds like a plan. We'd love to have her on.
Thanks a lot, Paul.
Thanks, guys.
Well, we made it to the end of the week. Appreciate you being a part of the show. We will see you on Monday.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.